Hey everyone, you're listening to Topping the Curve, and this is your host, Sephora Gray. Hey everyone, welcome back to Topping the Curve. On today's episode, I have Christina Higgins, who is here to talk to you guys about grades. So Christina was a 3L when I was a 1L last year, and she was very crucial to my success during my 1L year. And so I really wanted to bring her onto the podcast so that she could share her secrets with all of you. So Christina, can you tell everyone a little bit about yourself? And then after that, we'll jump right in.
Hey everyone, my name is Christina. So just a little bit about me. I graduated from Georgetown Law in 2020. My 2L year, I was the secretary of the Black Law Students Association and joined the Georgetown Journal on Poverty Law and Policy. My 3L year, I was the vice president of administration of the Black Law Students Association, the senior notes editor of the Poverty Law Journal, and a student attorney in the Social Enterprise and Nonprofit Law Clinic. So I graduated in 2020. And now I'm a first year associate at a firm called Covington and Burling here in DC, where I split my time between the cybersecurity and data privacy practice group and the white collar practice group.
Wow, Christina. So you did a ton of stuff in law school. And I remember when I was a 1L, I forgot who it was I went to, but I went to one of the other 2Ls and I was like, what do I need to do to make sure that, you know, I best position myself to get a big law job my 1L summer. And I remember that person, they were like, go talk to Christina, like go talk to Christina. And so I came to you, I was like, Christina, what do I do? How do I study? How do I get good grades or best position myself to do that? And I found that you were really helpful in, you know, helping me create my schedule and essentially doing what I needed to do. But before I ask you about that, I want to talk about just before law school. So in setting yourself up for law school, or preparing for it, did you do anything that would have helped you, you think, in your 1L and even 2L year?
Yeah, so as far as any substantive law school learning, I didn't attend any sort of pre-law programs. I recall reading a book that a friend that attended law school passed along. It sort of introduced all the topics you'll learn in your first year. And looking back, that probably wasn't necessary. Although we all learn, you know, the same subjects year after year, teachers have very different ways of, you know, teaching things and might place more emphasis on some subjects compared to others. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's imperative to, you know, do any substantive learning or attend any programs prior to law school. I mean, if you do, that's great. But if, you know, you're not in a position to, I wouldn't say you're necessarily missing out on anything crucial. Honestly, the best piece of advice I can give before law school is just relax if you're in the position to do so. Spend time with your family, spend time engaging in your favorite hobbies, traveling, you know, whatever recharges you or refreshes you so that you're entering into law school with, you know, a good amount of energy and stamina to hit the ground running and work hard.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you said something about, you know, teachers and professors. So I want to kind of capitalize on that. When you were going into law school and, you know, preparing yourself for these exams and I guess, you know, analyzing your teachers and your professors, was there anything in particular that you did or how did you know to, you know, focus on your teachers or professors? Or if you didn't focus on your teachers or professors, what did you do?
So something that helped me year after year was just getting in the practice as early as possible of asking questions on anything I might not fully understand as they come up. It's really easy to tell yourself that you'll just wait closer to the exam time to sort of get all your questions answered and get clarity. You know, it's a very long semester and you only have that one, you know, large test, you know, week 13 or week 14. But seeking clarity, whether it be from your teachers or with a study group as early as possible, will make finals time stressful because you'll have more time to focus on outlining and taking practice exams instead of trying to, you know, learn and understand the material new. And I found that the earlier I was able to, you know, fully grasp the material and what's being taught, the better essentially I was able to perform on the exam. Something I found super helpful along with, you know, just visiting my teachers regularly and questions is joining a study group. Friday, my study group and I would just run through all the material that was taught that week in all of our classes. It would take almost, 4 or 5 hours all day, nearly. But we'd ask questions, we'd talk through difficult concepts, and a lot of material was already fleshed out, which made that transition into outlining and taking practice exams much easier, since we weren't scrambling to, learn this law or learn that law or learn how this concept applies or something like that.
So when you're talking about going to your professors or doing these study groups, what would you say to someone or to a law student who is, shy, or they're kind of scared to go to their professor's office hours, or they're, maybe they don't have any friends in their 1L section? What would you say to them? Would you say kind of, well, suck it up and, go to your professor's office hours? Or would you say there's an alternate route?
Always alternate routes to succeeding in law school. I wouldn't say that, joining a study group is the end all be all, ultimate answer to all questions. I personally found it really helpful. But, if you're a solo learner, that is, completely fine, completely understandable. Different people, learn and retain information in different ways. So if you do find yourself having questions about the substantive law, that is something that you want to try and make an effort to ask your teacher about that. Right. All teachers have office hours. Well, there will be probably asking, a bunch of questions during that specific time. But if you have concerns about, asking your question in that sort of group setting, you can always email your teacher and ask for a private meeting. Teachers are usually open to that just because schedules vary. Any way that you can sort of overcome that, shyness or fear in getting that question answered, I think that will set you up for success in your exams. And also, if you're struggling sort of, making friends in law school, reaching out for a study group or joining a study group is a good way to counterbalance that. My study group or some of my closest friends in law school, one of them went on to be my roommate and is, one of my best friends now. It's just, they go hand in hand, sort of, study group and making friends.
Yeah, I can completely relate. Like, to this day, my 1L section mates and quote unquote study group girlfriends are also some of my closest friends now. And we talk every day in a group chat. So can definitely second everything that Christina just said. And then Christina, you also mentioned, in line with making sure that you're going to your professors when you do have a question about the substantive law, I want to kind of transition from that to cold calls, because I think a lot of people go into law school dreading, being cold called in class and then having this breakdown or not knowing what to say. And I would just like for you to kind of talk about cold calls and whether you think, it's super imperative that you quote unquote ace the cold call.
Yeah. Cold calls, they can be scary. I still remember my first cold call to this day. It was almost like an body experience. And it was a question. It wasn't even about a case. It was just some, just very, very different question that the professor had for me. I was not able to nail it, but it came, it went. And I actually remember getting cold called twice in the same day. And like the whole class realized it and everyone was just sort of like snickering and laughing because that had never happened before to anyone. So the cold calls, they're gonna come, they're gonna happen. You might be a little nervous for your first or second cold call, but that is completely okay. Cold calls do not make or break your grade. Your final exam does. So it's just something that comes along with the territory of being a law school student. But you will survive your cold calls. I will say the best way to be prepared for cold calls is to just brief your cases. I would brief all of my cases in 1L, but caveat that by saying I would heavily rely on a resource called Quimby, which is basically just a database of all or most of, traditional, typical law school cases. It can be a pretty time-consuming process to brief cases, depending on how many you're assigned on any given day, but Quimby just helped a lot with that. I would sort of just read the Quimby brief briefly, then read the case and supplement anything that might have been missing from the Quimby brief to sort of make my own case brief. So we'll definitely plug, you know, briefing your cases, if not just heavily outlining, you know, the case, so that you're, especially if you're nervous about cold calling, because you'll have all the information right there in front of you. You can just sort of, you know, read to the professor, you know, what the case is about.
Yeah, completely agree. Love Quimby. I absolutely say pay for it. I still use it to this day. It's a lifesaver. And to Christina's point about reading the case on Quimby and then going to the book and reading it there, I found that to be really, really helpful, because it kind of helps you get a better understanding of the case prior to actually reading the case in the case book. So Christina, you talked about case briefing. And so do you think that briefing all your cases your 1L year helped you do well on your exams?
I would say that going through the process of briefing cases all year was helpful when it came time to outline for exams. There was just a lot less scrambling going on as far as organizing the material. So again, even though briefing cases is a very time-consuming process, I think it will save you loads of time on the back end when you're synthesizing all the information, doing the outlining process, taking practice exams. So yeah, I would plug briefing those cases throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. And so when somebody's going through briefing, do you recommend book briefing? Do you recommend like actually writing it out? And if so, like what should they write out? Should they write out the facts, the rule of law, the issue? Like what did you do?
So my briefing process, again, I would read the Quimby brief just to level set, you know, what the case is about. And then I'd read the full case. And then I just do an outline brief, a brief sort of summary of the facts. The main sort of, I guess, meat, most important part of a brief is the rule of law and how that rule applies to the set of facts. And then ultimately the conclusion. So, you know, you don't need to go into, you know, just a super detailed, like pretty summary of the facts, mm-hmm. sort of like the less important part of a brief, but you really want to make sure you're understanding not only the rule of law, but how that rule of law applies to the set of facts to reach the conclusion, because that's what you'll be doing on the exams. You'll get sort of a similar set of facts, just like what might be in a case brief, and you're going to be asked to apply a rule of law to come to a conclusion.
So essentially it sounds like what you're saying is when somebody's going through to brief a case, they should be really trying to understand the holding and then the rule of law that came out of that holding and then how it applied to the facts of that case, so that when it comes to exam time, they can essentially replicate that exact formula. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Rule of law, application to the rule, and conclusion.
Okay. So Christina, I want to talk to you about how you, or your preparation leading up to the exam. So you start school end of August, September, whenever it is. How are you preparing yourself to do well for the exam? So I'm talking about, you know, your readings for class and things like that.
Yeah, so I forgot who passed this piece of advice on to me, but this was a game changer. So I would do all of my readings on the weekends for all of my classes, which left the weeks to sort of relearn everything, because you'll come to find that once you're in class, like your understanding of the material or what you thought you understood of the material is maybe not accurate, or it changes, or it's just, you're thrown more than what you sort of expected or what you got from the reading. So I found it really important and also really helpful to just get all the initial reading out of the way on the weekend. So I think I would start on Friday. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I would read for all of my classes, which left Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday to sort of review my notes after every class. There's also, you know, a lot of extracurricular activities throughout the week. So it left time to attend those sort of sessions, meetings. And yeah, I found that to be an okay schedule, it still left like I would maybe wrap up reading, you know, at night sometimes. So I still left the night free to do what I wanted to do, you know, hang out with friends, go out, what have you. It is like sort of just like, I guess, a rigorous schedule because you're not taking a single day off. But I found that to be really helpful just because, again, during the week, like when you're in class, like after class, you're just like, wow, I was not expecting that. What is going on? So I really had to dedicate time after each every class to just sort of honestly relearn everything. So that was my approach.
Yeah, I'm like on the other side of this computer, like shaking my head. And I'm wondering, it's making me wonder if you were the one who I got this from, but maybe you were on the BALSA boot camp panel, like before school even started, and you guys were talking about your study schedules. But yeah, I know I did the same thing. So, and it's something that I recommend to my mentees to this day. I do all of my readings for class on the weekend. So unlike Christina, though, I don't do Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I instead do Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And that's because I was able to do that because my 1L year, my Thursday classes ended at 11 a.m. And so I had the rest of the day to do it that way. Gotcha. But yeah, I did the exact same thing. And I found, just like Christina said, it gives you the entire week to do other stuff, like whether that's reading supplements, whether that's your extracurricular activities, whether that's going to your professor's office hours, whether that's relearning the material. It's very hard, I think, to try and do all of that in addition to having to do two or three classes of readings before your class the next day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that made all the difference for me as far as just, you know, being able to like really synthesize and learn the material, which again just makes everything so much easier come exam time because you're not scrambling to, you know, learn or really understand what the professor said week three because you took time after class to review it.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, like Christina said, it's, you know, kind of maybe a more rigorous schedule, but I still had free time. Like I was still going to the club and going to the bar and I was fine. And I would say it gets easier when you first start in law school. It's your readings are going to take a lot longer than they will when, you know, you get more used to it, probably second semester 1L. But yeah, it gets easy. Well, I don't know if I should say it gets easier, but you get better.
You get better. Yes. I remember the first side brief. Oh, it would take me hours. And I was like, this, like, what did I sign myself up for? This is not happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'll get faster, you know, it'll come more natural as time goes on. So definitely be patient with yourself and reach out to school, 2Ls and 3Ls at your school for any advice on how to get faster and use Quimby.
Yes. If you take anything from this episode, use Quimby. I want to talk about, you know, when you start outlining. When did you start outlining and when do you recommend 1Ls or law students start outlining?
So if I can recall, I began outlining maybe a little after the halfway mark in the semester. I would often or pretty much always created my own outlines, but never from scratch. I would normally take an outline from an outline bank or pass down to me by one of my mentors and use it as a starting point in making my own outline. I found this to be helpful because although the outline process can be super time consuming, taking the time to actually write the outline is really, really helpful for reviewing the material and just fleshing out anything you don't understand. But at the same time, there's no need to reinvent the wheel during the outline process. We're literally learning the same rules and same cases that prior law students have learned year after year after year. Like you can look at an outline from 2000 and it'll contain 20 years ago and it'll contain the same cases, the same facts, the same rules. So I highly recommend finding a good outline to start. Use that as your base to create your own outline. But ultimately, you know, you want to do your own writing, your own words. Make sure that everything in your final outline is written in a way that you're able to fully understand and digest.
So when you're going about looking for the outline, you know, to kind of give you a starting point, does it matter if that outline came from someone who had your professor before, or it doesn't matter if it's like, you know, a random outline off the internet that's, you know, saying civil procedure.
Mm-hmm. So you want to start with looking for outlines that came from your professor, because again, I think I mentioned this, teachers emphasize different things. Although we're all learning the same rules as like a general matter, some professors skip subjects altogether, and some really place more emphasis on certain aspects of the law than others. So if you're able to find an outline from your old professor, that is the best starting point. If you don't, like, for example, if it's a new professor, that it's not the end of the world. You can either start with a commercial outline or an outline from another professor that teaches the course. But if you do have an opportunity to, you know, get an outline from a professor that's taught the class for years or a few years, you definitely want to start there.
And after your 1L year, did you continue to create your own outlines throughout your 2L and 3L year as well?
I did. Yeah. Outlining was something I did throughout law school. I honestly cannot imagine going into an exam without an outline. Like, that just sounds like, yeah, not a good idea. Your outline is basically your cheat, you know, they're notes more or less, but they're, an outline is organized in a way just to, once you get to the exam, you know where certain rules are, you know where certain certain holdings are, that you can just apply it right away to the facts of the case. So a big thing in outline is organization. So you really just want to like get to know your outline, know where everything is. I definitely would not recommend going into an exam without an outline, but that's just advice.
Bold. Yeah. So frequently, or at least I know I heard multiple times throughout my 1L year that you need 3 outlines. So you need your one large outline that you know, that's the one where you kind of start off that outline that you got from someone else and it contains everything. And then you need to pare that down to like the most important topics. And then you need a third outline, which is like your attack outline. And that's the outline where it's like the entire course in 2 pages. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that? And how do you recommend going about making those 3 outlines if that is the case?
So I would recommend attack outlines in instances where your main outline that you start with, the first one, the big outline, is just super long. So if I can recall, I think property 1L year, my outline was, I think, like something like 100 pages. It was just so long. And, you know, it was organized, but I only wanted to utilize it for circumstances where I just completely was just like drawing a blank on the material. And I thought it would be helpful to just sort of break that down into, you know, like you mentioned, just a smaller outline, which has, you know, it cuts out a lot of like the facts and has just more, you know, rules and application. So yeah, I would definitely recommend an attack outline for those outlines that are just super long and just have a lot of information. You can always obviously command fine during the final, but I just always found that, you know, the attack outline. And also something I noticed too is that you're gonna be reviewing your outline so much to the extent that like you will almost like memorize some of the information. I remember like some exams, it was just like, I didn't even have to rely on my outline as much just because after reviewing it so much, it just came to memory, but I still wanted to just, you know, quickly double check things, quickly double check rules. And that was just, that's where the attack outline was super helpful in that I was just a quick check, you know, make sure I'm on the right page, make sure I'm saying the rule correctly. So yeah, those attack outlines are helpful. Also for the purposes of a checklist. So, you know, you want to make sure you have like all of like, you know, certain rules have like multiple components. They have certain elements. So I found the attack outline to be helpful in that it was just a checklist. Like, okay, I have element 1 of this rule, element 2 of this rule, element 3. That's where that came in handy.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you said, especially your 2 points, your first one being, you know, with how much you work with your outline, it's essentially like ingrained into your memory to an extent. I know first semester 1L year, there was most of my exams, but particularly civil procedure, I barely looked at my outline. And then regarding your point about the checklist, I think that's really helpful, especially for torts, where you have like negligence and it has a whole bunch of elements, or like strict liability and those different things. And even contracts, where you can just go and look at your quick attack outline, be like, did I hit everything? Yes, I did. Okay, I can move on. So,
agreed.
So when you have your big outline and then you have your attack outline, essentially, how do you go into the exam prepared? Like, how do you know when you're ready? What is it? Is it a feeling? Is it like, okay, I've looked at this twice? Is it, what is it that help that makes you know, okay, I'm ready to go in and do well on this exam?
So I'm going to be completely honest. The first round of law school exams, my 1L year, I honestly did not know if I was ready. Since exams are scored on a curve, you know, your performance largely depends on how well everyone else did. So I honestly did not know what to expect as far as my performance. So I would say to that, just do all that you can. Go into the exam with the mindset that you have exhausted all possible resources to be able to understand the material. You've met with teachers, you've met with study groups, if that's your thing. You don't want to enter into the exam with any outstanding questions. That is the best way that I would say I prepared myself 1L year, not knowing what to expect, was just doing all that I could to, just not have any questions, make sure everything made sense to the extent that it could.
Yeah, no, all of that makes complete sense. And to your point about, you know, not entering the exam with any outstanding questions, it brought something to my mind about the use of supplements. And I remember my first semester, my mentor, or one of my mentors, told me, you know, supplements are like super helpful, you should use them. And it's something that I tell my mentees now. I will be completely honest. I did not use supplements my first semester like I should have. But I did my second semester, even though we went pass fail. But I do find supplements to, you know, help supplement your understanding when there is that lack of understanding that you couldn't get either from the professor or just from the class. So I'm just wondering how you feel about supplements.
Okay, yeah. So similar to you, I think I was advised to use supplements, but yeah, I didn't for some reason. I didn't use them too often. Kind of like you mentioned, I would only use them if there was something I just really, really didn't understand, and the teacher's explanation wasn't helping. My study group's explanation wasn't helping. That was sort of just like, I use supplements like a sort of like a last resort resource. Again, that's just because I find that, you know, the rules are pretty black and white, but teachers teach them in different ways. So you kind of want to have an understanding of the rule and the way in which your teacher conveyed it. So that was always sort of the first resource, the teacher and sort of her expectations. And again, if just all else fails and you're still not understanding, which will happen, that happened to me all my classes plenty of times. I would go to the supplement. I'd go to three supplements sometimes because different supplements, they'll lay things out different ways. So yeah, definitely was not my first resource, but looking back on it, I probably use a supplement in all of my law school classes, even in 3L at some point in time. Again, just because, yeah, just hearing certain things sometimes just they don't land on you the way in which they should for whatever reason. I guess sometimes you just have like a mental block with some concepts, and the supplements would come in handy there. But I would definitely plug your teacher as an initial resource for something you don't understand.
Yeah, completely agree. And I think to your point about, you know, it being something that you can go to in order to make sure that you understand if you're just not getting it is really important because, for example, I'll just talk about my contracts class. I mean, it's partially my fault because I wasn't paying super close attention in that class. It was right after lunch and I had the itis. But in that class, like I did go to the supplement and it really did help me to understand and bring everything together. And you know what, at the end of the day, I did great. So that's just to say, you know, exhaust all your options. Like Christina said, do not go into the exam not understanding something. Do what you need to do to make sure that you are prepared. And then, so just kind of finally, I guess, moving away from that, I want to talk to you about the actual exam itself, and the exam period and the scheduling and how you did it, how you studied. So the first question about that is, how did you set up your schedule if you're a 1L and you have 4 doctrinals or 5 doctrinals if it's second semester? How do you study for 5 substantive law classes in essentially a 2-week period?
Yeah, so finals is going to be a hectic time, you will come to find, especially that first, you know, 1L semester. You don't know what to expect as far as the final. You've got a legal writing class most likely, and you've got, you know, 4 or 5 doctrinals. I would say that a schedule is probably best to sort of navigate the craziness of the time. If I can recall, I believe that I would complete all the outlining maybe a week or so before the semester ended, up until that point. And once I was done outlining, that's when I would sort of set an exam schedule, and then just take the exams according to my schedule. So maybe like Monday, I would take a civil procedure exam and a property exam. Tuesday, I would take a torts exam and a contracts exam, and just sort of like cycling through the schedule and taking as many exams as you possibly can before you take the real thing. Teachers, I feel like there's maybe a range of, you know, and you probably know better or have better eyes in this before now, maybe like 4 to 6 exams on average on the little, on your exam bank that you'll probably have or have access to. So yeah, just, I would schedule them out where I would, so that I could try to get to most, if not all, of the exams. So, you know, if one teacher had 4 exams, or another teacher had 8 exams, I was obviously taking, you know, the exams with where there were 4 less often than there were 8. So yeah, sometimes I'm maintaining 2 exams a day, but I will just plug trying to get to as many exams as possible, especially the more recent exams. But yeah, that I definitely do recall setting a schedule.
Some of these exams, they're 3 hours or 4 hours or 5 hours. Did you take them full out? Did you write it full out? Were they fully timed? How did you do it?
Yeah, that's a good question. So early on, sort of, so maybe like the first like 2 exams, just say a professor had 5 exams. Mm-hmm. The first 2, maybe 3, I would not do fully time. That just takes too long. I would just sort of outline my answer. Sometimes I would just read an answer in my head and whole answer. Just because, you know, the main sort of goal of the exam sort of taking process and the practice exam process is making sure your answer mirrors the model answer. So, you know, as much as time you're taking sort of actually like taking the exam, there also has to be a good amount of time dedicated to comparing your answer to the model answer and seeing where you went wrong. So I didn't find necessarily that like writing a pretty answer, especially again, most of the exams are 3 hours minimum. Some are 6 hours, some are 8 hours. That would just take too long. But again, just getting to, you know, exactly what the teacher wanted to see, which is the model answer is the gold standard. So a lot of the work in the exam prep was really just, again, like maybe outlining an answer or reading an answer in my head and then just studying to a T, you know, the model exam and, or the model answer and what the teacher wanted in that, what the teacher looked for in that.
So when you go back and you're comparing your answer to that model answer, what exactly are you looking for? Are you looking for something that you missed? Are you looking for writing style? How do you know that you're where you need to be or you're not where you need to be?
That's a good question. So I'm definitely looking for analysis. Anything that I miss in the application of the rule to the set of facts, that is sort of like the meat or the most important part of any exam. You'll find that most of these model answers are really like far from like what you would think of a model answer. The grammar might be off, there might be some spelling errors here and there. Some model answers, they're not even finished. Like it'll cut off mid-sentence because that was all the student that was able to get out, and that was the model answer. But I've been explained by professors that the reason why the answer was chosen as the best exam, the model answer, was because the analysis was there. So if you're sort of missing, if you're missing rules, like elements of rules, that is, 100%, you got to get that, go back to your outline, make sure you have all the rules there, get that fixed first and foremost. But then secondly, it's the application to the set of facts. That's what being a lawyer is about. You're getting, cases and clients, and they have these situations, and you have to be able to apply the rule of law to their facts. So that was the main thing that I was looking for. But outside of that, I wasn't really looking for any sort of stylistic, I guess, feedback, because A, it ranges, and B, that's not what they're looking for on the test. Like the test is just, it's really about the analysis.
Yeah. So once you're when you're comparing your analysis, and let's say you notice something missing, what do you do at that point? Do you go back to your outline and add it in? Like, how do you make sure that you don't make that mistake again?
So yeah, I would just read it. Sometimes if there was a really good rule statement, I would just literally take it from the model answer and plop it in my outline and just write it exactly how they wrote it, in my own words, but more or less just mirror, that rule. And yeah, I mean, it's hard to sort of, I guess, say in words how I would, I guess, study the analysis, but yeah, just, I guess, just reading it.
Would you say there's like an element of memorization to it, or is it kind of just like making sure you understand the thought process of everything?
I think there's definitely just understanding the thought process. There's really no memorization there when it comes to analysis, because you're not going to have the same set of facts on your test than, whatever old exam that you're taking. But analysis, I think, is something that comes with time, and the more model or the more practice exams you take, the more sort of patterns you'll pick up on and see, as far as what the teacher is looking for in that analysis. But yeah, it's hard to sort of sum up in words how that improves. But I guess the only thing I can think of is just taking as many exams as you possibly can.
Yeah, no, and I think because we're speaking to an audience of prospective law students, but also current law students. I think the current law students will definitely understand what you mean. At least I know I do. Just the more exams you take, the better at exam taking you get. And so, yeah, so it's kind of like it's like a turning the wheel process that. And that's why I think it's so important to take past exams. And that's something Christina had told me my 1L year. And I remember we were actually sitting in the cafe in McDonough when you helped me with my schedule. But another question that I wanted to ask you is, so you're taking two exams a day, and actually this brings two questions to my mind. But the first one is, sometimes even me, and I'm pretty like I enjoy doing work, and so I don't mind like sitting down and just churning it out 8 hours, whatever it takes a day. But when it comes to taking practice exams, once I take one practice exam a day, I'm like, yo, I am done. I'm so tired. So I hear like, you would take two a day. How did you do that? Do you have any tips? Yeah, just how did you do that?
Yeah, so exam season is tough. It's exhausting. It never gets easier, even as a 2L, as a 3L. I just recall being completely exhausted. But again, something I would just remind myself is just to do all that you can, put your best foot forward. At the end of the day, once you get your results back, whatever those results are, you know that you did absolutely everything that you could to try to do well. Some grades that I didn't, always do great on. I was not a straight A student. I got B pluses, Bs here and there. But for those exams that I did get Bs and B pluses, I just couldn't fault myself at the end of the day because I really thought that I absolutely did everything that I could to try and succeed. So if you go in with that mindset that you are just going to, put your best foot forward in all that you do, seek all the resources that are available, I think that you'll just have a much better mindset about whatever result that you get.
Yeah, completely agree. And I want to emphasize, your point about when, regardless of what your result is, you should feel good that you've done all you can. And I know the name of the podcast is like topping the curve, but at the end of the day, you are graded on a curve. And so,
Absolutely.
you can end up at the tippy top, but you can also not. And I think kind of one of the most important points to take away from when you're talking about grades and, trying to do well, you doing all of this stuff will put you in the best position to do as well as you can. And I think it'll give you a higher chance than if you do not do these things, but it's
Absolutely.
also not going to guarantee that you're at the top. So that's not something that I want you to take away. And I don't think it's something that, Christina is saying like, oh, if you do this, you're going to be here. So
Agreed. Yeah. Just it's all about doing your best, putting your best foot forward. You're going to have a ton of resources thrown at you. A lot of it is just going to be discernment and judgment as to what fits, well for you. Like I said, I've been plugging the study groups. That might not work for you, and that is completely fine. But whatever, or you might love the supplements. That might be your first go-to. So whatever works for you. But just make sure you're doing your best. In the day, you can say that you did everything that you could to try and succeed.
So now I'm going to bring us into the final part of the episode. So this essentially, I'm going to ask you four questions. I just want you to say the first thing or first thought, that sentence, whatever it may be, that comes to your head. So the first question is, how can law students best set themselves up for success?
Okay, so I found law school success in making the experience a collaborative one. Reach out to your friends for help. Reach out to professors. Reach out to those who came before you. You'll probably have many resources at your fingertips. So seek those opportunities to collaborate with people and never be afraid to ask for help.
Heavy on the reaching out to those people who came before you. It's one of the most imperative things to help you succeed because you don't know what you're getting into. Second question, how should law students choose what extracurriculars to get involved with?
That's a good question. I would say, I mean, you might not have an answer to this sort of once you begin law school, but if you think that you're interested in, trial, sort of oral advocacy, you want to maybe get into barrister's counsel, moot court, trial ad. If you're into academia, you want to just get better at your blue booking skills. You might want to consider joining a journal. And most law schools will probably have just a good amount of just sort of niche clubs to join. So, yeah, anything that you're interested in, whether it be health law, education law, family law, at least at Georgetown, there were quite a few student organizations. Or if there's not a student organization, talk to your, you know, your school leadership about starting an organization. So yeah, whatever your passion is, either join an organization that is relevant to that passion or think about starting a new one.
Yeah, I like that. And then third question, what is one person or one thing that every law student must have?
I would say that every law student must have either a mentor figure, or a group of people that you can confide in. Again, you will have questions, you will need help, and you want to be able to feel comfortable reaching out for it. So you'll know that the 2 L's and the 3 L's, they were in the same boat as you were, as a 1 L, just confused, just not really knowing what to expect. But that made all the difference for me. Invaluable advice from my mentors, the people that came before me, that is absolutely a must have.
Completely agree, guys. I'm a 2L, still reaching out for advice. So completely agree. And then last question, Christina, how do you relax while in law school? Or I should say, how did you relax while in law school?
Oh, okay. That's a really good question. I'm going to be completely honest. There was not a lot of relaxing going on that first semester, 1L year. Law school is hard in and of itself. But I just also found just generally not knowing what to expect just put so much added pressure onto that. I was not relaxing a lot, but that's just my personality. That's just the way I am. I would say that if you sort of adopt that schedule that I mentioned where you read on the weekends and you, you know, just free up for weeks to sort of, you know, review what you learn in class, that left, you know, your Friday and Saturday nights to go out. So I would say, like, yeah, up until exam time, like, I was still going at it, you know, watching Netflix, hanging out with friends. Those were my sort of relaxation, sort of go-tos, I would say. But yeah, that obviously varies from person to person, but just, you know, be ready to work hard, especially that first semester, because there's going to be a lot thrown at you. But yeah, take the time as well to, just escape for a little bit, whatever gets you there.
Yeah, I like that answer. It sounds a lot like my answer. You know, my relaxation was going out with my friends either on that Friday or Saturday. So
yeah, definitely.
All right, Christina. Well, that brings us to the end. So thank you so much for coming and allowing me to interview you today. I think, you know, everyone is going to be very excited to hear this episode. I know it's a topic that everyone wants to learn about, but are kind of hesitant to ask about. So thank you for coming.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed answering questions. It's just like taking me back down memory lane a little bit. It's been nice to sort of just remember how these things happen. And there are some things that I would just never make it through, but here I am on the other side of like, it seems surreal, but yeah, I'm glad I was able to join today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like even now I'm just like, oh my gosh, when you're in the thick of it, you're like, this is never going to end. And then, you know, you're past it and you're like, ugh, I can't even believe I was going through that. So, but you guys, I will leave Christina's information in the show notes. So you have it, you can follow her on Instagram, you can contact her, anything you want. All that information will be in the show notes. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram and subscribe on my website so you never miss an episode. All right. Thanks, guys. I'll see you on my next one.
Bye.